Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Guys, what's up? I want to take a quick second to let you guys know that our podcast is supported by Anchor. That's right. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. I'm doing this ad from my phone as we speak. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. Evidently, I can't talk. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Now back to the show. Welcome back, Wash Up Walk-Ons fans. Episode 91 of the podcast. We're back. We're rolling. We're ready to go today with another guest. But before I get into the introduction of the guest, I want to let you know that our third co-host, Kevin, is late again. And one thing about Iowa football and what we have been bred to do through just being football players in general is to be prompt, to show up on time, to not waste other people's time like he is currently doing right now on a Sunday morning, the Lord's Day. We record this podcast on the Lord's Day because everybody said that they would be available at all times. You know, Kevin's not at church right now. There's multiple church services throughout the day that he could go to. He knew what time he was supposed to show up to this podcast, and he didn't. So when Kevin shows up, whenever that may be, there's going to be a long pause. I'm not going to say anything. These two are not going to say anything. He's going to have to walk into the head coach's meeting and stand at the front of the room late, all eyes on him. And we're just going to enjoy that awkward silence because Kevin is a prick. Now that I've gone past that rant, I want to introduce our guest today. This is one of I call Macon one of my uncles. I'll call this guy one of my uncles too because – I was a backer for a short period of time, and he was one of the leaders of the room, a legendary walk-on, one of our great friends, the original Savage back, if I'm not mistaken.
The Ridge.
And, man, the big tuna. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Travis Perry, everybody. Trav, that's a good place to start, and I wanna make that clear. And obviously – as the original Savage back would, you're here and Kevin isn't. And I don't know. That just is what it is. Kevin texted us and said the Kmart or the come and go internet is wonky. So he's giving an internet excuse, but
it's come and go.
Yeah. It's a joke. It's the running joke on the podcast that we steal our internet from come and go. So, anyway, Travis Perry, everybody really, really was the original. You were you were fourth phase special team guy, walk on. When did that start? Was that like third year, redshirt sophomore year, where you started to get playing time?
Yeah, as actually redshirt freshman year, started on kickoff and kick return that whole year, and then kind of a little bit of punt return. The redshirt freshman year, I actually started a couple games at linebacker my redshirt freshman year for Hitchens.
Did you start in the big house?
Yeah, that was my first career start at linebacker. Yeah, that was wild.
Hey, Kev.
Kevin's on.
What's up, boys?
We're just recording with a Savage back, one that is on time and one that, you know, is pretty prompt and everything.
Oh, of course you guys already started. Why wouldn't you guys? Who knows? What's going on, Travis?
What's up, Cycord? How you doing, man?
Good to see you, brother. How you doing?
I'm good.
We were just talking about how Travis was the original godfather Savage back.
Oh, that he was. He was the one who showed us the way.
He really.
Anybody who watches The Mandalorian, this is the way.
This is the way. Yeah, godfather of that Savage back. We really need. I've been saying it. They need to add a room at the complex, and they just need to direct all the white walk-ons to that room, and then you guys can just kind of create your own Bible and just read that, and then you guys come and. You have your own SB room, and that's just – it just is what it is.
That would've been great.
Trav, you –
statues.
Yeah,
I want statues for all these Savage backs. I want monuments in that building.
That means there's going to be a monument of Javas, so.
We can ask him out.
We can give that – like, we're going to make him, like, a Greek statue, and we're going to give him a really small pecker.
So, for those listening – this is a guess that Travis isn't as recent as some of the people we've had on. Trav, your senior year was the golden year, right?
Yeah, 2015.
Yeah, so when we talk about that year and all
the greatest year of Iowa football history, shout out Pat Anger because he's second on that list. We're clear.
When we talk about that year and all that went into that and the off season and the senior leadership. This guy right here, Travis, is one of those guys, along with Ott and Blythe and Marshall Kane, that really led the way in that season. Trav, what was it like being a part of that senior group? When did you guys know – just talk about that senior group and why you think it was different that year.
Yeah, I'll start with a story that you guys might not even know about. So after the bowl game, we had GPP, right? You get into the prowlers and all that fun stuff. 3 weeks after the 8 Hawkeye Challenge captains were picked, I was fortunate enough to be one of the 8. And can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And got picked as one of the 8, went through the 3-week GPP phase, and then we went right into finals. Which was, as you guys remember, I think it's NCAA rule that they technically had to be optional workouts, even though we all knew they weren't optional, right? They gave us like 8 different time slots. but we had one of the 8 captains not show up for the first 2 days of optional workouts. And every captain kind of had a text thread going on with this team of anywhere from 12 to 15 guys we had on our team. But we didn't really have a captain's text thread going. And that's when the thread started between the 8 of us. And the other 7 of us who were going to weights were not very happy with this 8th captain. And we called him out over text. And it was brutal, man. It was 7 guys just attacking this one guy. And this one guy happened to be one of the premier captains of that season. And it got pretty intense.
Can I back you up, Travis? Yeah. This is January of 2015.
Yeah, so this was right after the bowl game.
This was right after we got our wieners cut off.
Yeah. So I guess it wouldn't have been finals. What was it? It wouldn't have been finals. We had optional workouts, all I remember. Because it would have been after finals, right?
Yeah, finals is in December. That's before the bowl game.
I don't know what I'm talking about there. But it was something optional, I remember. So it might have even been – it must have been in the spring.
Pre-spring break or something?
Yeah, it must have been in the spring. But I just remember it was optional, and this guy didn't show. And – he was getting attacked in this text thread, and he showed up for day 3. And it just so happened there were like 5 of the captains at the same lift group. And the locker room got intense. Like there was almost a fist fight that went down in the locker room with his captain. I'm trying and to- he was not happy with the rest of us. And that following Monday after we got done with the optional workouts, he had a team meeting and he apologized to the entire team and said that basically his actions were unacceptable and that we were right and all this stuff. And that's where it kind of clicked, like, man, we might have something special going here. Cause I've been a part of teams where you have guys that, you know, are kind of half-assing it and nobody holds them accountable to it because they're kind of that untouchable captain. But that was one of the times where I'm like, man, we might have something special here. Cause we got a group of guys who are going to bat to say, hey, you either get in shape or you're not only not going to be a captain, you're going to be off the team. And it legit almost got to that point where we met and we were going to decide to kick him out of the captain's room. But that was kind of a special moment.
And what you talk about there, the leaders, the type of team where, you know, you don't call somebody out and you do have a bunch of guys who are slacking and kind of just get away with it. The perfect example of that was the year before. And again, I mean, I'm not going to name names because a lot of these guys are really good guys, but it just so happened that the way the dynamic worked of that year, the 2014 year, there was some sliding, slipping, and going around where the off-season challenge, not to say that it is it is you have to have a good year in the off-season championship to have a good year during the regular season, but it's pretty goddamn highly correlative. And we just didn't take that 2014 off-season championship as serious as I think we ever took it after the 15 season. So it was special, and we talk about it all the time, Drake, Kevin, and I think that was a really important time in our tenure at Iowa as well. Mm-hmm. We were in our third year that 2015 season, and that's especially for someone who walked on, you're dead middle in your career. You're kind of at a stopping point of, okay, I'm going to start to make a rise in the program here, or I'm not. And you know, it's kind of the fork in the road. A lot of guys get forgotten at that point. They transfer, they drop out, not drop out, but they, you know, they go somewhere else, they quit, or you start to find your way onto the field, you make a name for yourself, and you kind of, and so for us three, your guys' senior class was really super important for our development and our last 2 years in the program. And I would say our senior class tried to really strive to be like your guys's was. And I would say you guys had a significant impact that is lasting all the way through this year's team and hopefully will continue to.
Yeah, the rise of Iowa football started in 2015. Like, we may not have been a 10-win team every year since, but it was the culture and, like, the way the program just shifted as a whole, and the players actually started to really get it, and everybody was holding themselves accountable and shit like that. Like, that really started in 2015.
Travis, what was your favorite moment from that season?
Ooh, honestly, it would probably have to be, I mean, God, there were so many. That Pittsburgh game was pretty sweet. I would say probably though, when we got our 12th victory in Lincoln, just walking off that field with all the Husker fans that, they say they, you know, sell out their stadium, but that's a bold-faced lie. You guys know
bold-faced lie, isn't it?
Not even. Yeah, you start the game and there's like three quarters of the stadium full. I mean, that entire corner of the end zone is empty, but that's all right. They can be delusional like they're back in the 90s. But walking off the field with that trophy and swarming to it, because as you guys know, that's when we kind of started to swarm towards the rival trophies, which was another kind of cool teamwork thing. But swarming towards that trophy and then going in that corner in Lincoln, Nebraska, where you're like kind of by the concession stands, but you're by the locker room and it's just all black and gold. Knowing that I guess we already knew we were going to the Big Ten championship at that point, but knowing that we had just completed 12 wins, that was pretty special. That was probably the highlight of that regular season.
It was also,
do you remember after the Wisconsin game, we're 4-0.
Uh-huh.
And you and me would sit next to each other in punt meetings and we're just like, you know, honestly, worst case scenario, we're going to. And then just every week, it's like, yeah,
week after that, worst case scenario. And then that became the true scenario.
It became
every single week.
It became a joke in the special teams meeting because in that front line. So it's kind of like I don't know. It made me feel special. You're in that front. You're in the front row of the punt meeting. Yeah, and absolutely. It was kind of like, I don't know. I feel like that year it was super special because Coach Wallace had taken over. And
there was the dogs.
Yeah. And we'll get to the dogs. There was no more fucking around at that point. Like Coach Wallace made special teams and punt team more important than the offense or the defense that year.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
And Coach Wallace's punt meetings and the way he treated his players, like if you were a dog, like if he saw you as a dog, you weren't really his player anymore. Like you were his friend. Like you guys were going to battle together and you guys were friends. Dude, I love the shit out of fucking Seth Wallace, man.
Yeah.
Those meetings are awesome.
So you know, you got the starting lineup in the front row, and we would all kind of get there. And that year, just the way it worked is everyone's there 10, 15 minutes early for the meeting because no one's going to fuck up. No one, you know, you don't want to be even on the back half of the guys to walk into the room because Coach Wallace is going to fucking call you out and be like, hey, is this shit important to you?
No, he's going to be screaming your name down the hallway as you're walking down. If the room is 3/4 full, it doesn't matter if you're still early. He's screaming at you down the hallway.
It's a fucking punt meeting and he's asking, where's Wadley at? Where the fuck is Akram?
It was 15 minutes before the meeting started.
Yeah. So we.
Did you get enough sleep last night, Akram?
So we'd be sitting in that front row, and we'd all kind of just look down the row and make jokes. And yeah, about halfway through the season, it was like, so hey, I mean, worst case scenario, we're going to the Rose Bowl, right?
Yeah.
Kind of a joke. We almost spoke it into existence. Like, hey, if we put it out there, we're just gonna stay accountable to ourselves. We're not gonna lose, and that's exactly what we did. That Nebraska game was the end of that game was super special because one, it was colder than the movie The Day After Tomorrow, and walking back into the locker room to get warm again after that fucking game was incredible. And I remember, but it was Ott and Budgeta were up at the front of the room after that game, and man, that was just it was a super special game for them, obviously, because they're from Nebraska, 12-0. Like, we got the trophy. KF was super emotional. Like, it was one of those games where he cried after the game because, you know, we capped off that season. That was really, really special. And moments like that are the moments where you sit in that locker room and you're like, what did I ever do to deserve this? Like, how did I get in that position? As a prep athlete at Urbandale High School, did you ever think that you were going to be a part of something that special? And like, just talk about that journey from being 16 or 17 years old. I looked up to you as a Central Iowa white linebacker, back in those days, like circa 2011, 2010.
Because when Kluver was a freshman in high school, he thought he was the shit.
I was sick. I was pretty sick.
Hey, I'll give Kluver a shout out here though, because I'll never forget the,
there don't was do a that.
Kickoff
no,
against
don't.
Dowling, I think.
Yep, yes, sir.
Yeah, he did have a good hit, Drake.
No, don't.
Blind squirrel found the nut, but he had a good hit. Don't.
It's the only nut I've ever found.
You don't know how many times he's told me about that story or told somebody that I was in proximity to that story. I feel like Tom Segura listening to Burt Kreischer's machine story for the 750th time about his freshman year in high school. How he found a fucking blind squirrel found a nut on a kickoff.
We can talk about that later, but anyway.
We're not going to talk about that later. That's the point.
What I want to talk about is backing it up before Travis tells his high school story to the swarm. I want to take a poll here. Out of the four of us, who did that as like a team unity thing and who did that out of blatant disrespect for the other team? Because I was full on the disrespect side. 100%.
So to be honest,
raise both hands.
Yeah, to be honest, the first time we did it, the idea was kind of circulating, and somehow Justin Lima got wind of this and was just sprinting.
Yep.
From like 30 to 30, just screaming that we were gonna do it, and I thought he was gonna headbutt every single one of us. I mean, you know how he is, but once he got wind of it, it was like we're doing it.
Dude, that guy is hopped up on probably smelling salts and about 80 Gatorade chews.
And
he was the one screaming body bags before every kickoff before Drake even got a hold of that one. It was insane.
So shout out to Justin Lima. And you know, as he was pacing the sideline, those fucking pal mechanics were just all out of whack.
Oh, it was phenomenal.
So I would say that.
But yes, go ahead.
No, I would say that I did it. You know, now that I think about it, I probably just started holding hands and swarming up with everybody because Lima was screaming at me and I didn't want to fucking deal with his shit.
Yeah.
But I would say, as we moved, as we moved forward with that whole idea, like every time we won a trophy that year, I would say I was probably more on the disrespect side. Like, hey, everybody grab hands. We're going to fucking walk it over their sideline and grab this thing as one. And it was like,
it was like a military wall. And these guys were all like spread out and they were just like bugs on a windshield, dude.
Well, the best part is the opposing team would try and like walk through it to shake our hands. And we would play just Red like Rover, close on everybody.
I didn't let go of shit.
People were ducking underneath us because we weren't letting go. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. Anyway, take it back.
My balls if they want to after we just hung it on them.
Wow. Take it back, Urbandale, the Jayhawks.
Yeah, so just a little bit about recruiting and all that.
All of it. Do you go back to
– or lack thereof because you're a washed-up walker.
Yeah, there was some of that. So my junior season, I had Eastern Illinois and South Dakota offer me full ride offers after that year. I took visits to Northwestern, Wisconsin, Iowa State, and Iowa. So those four were kind of the big schools that were recruiting me. And they all pretty much said the same thing, wanted to see senior tape, all that fun stuff. Second game of my senior year, I actually broke my foot. And so I missed 90% of the games my senior season. Came back, made a little playoff run. That was when Iowa, they had the expanded playoffs. So we were 3-6 and made it into the playoffs. Solid, which was kind of a joke, but we upset two teams and actually lost to Ankeny by four to get to the dome that year. So it was a pretty crazy ride. So end up getting some tape there towards the end of the year because I came back right before the playoffs, which is pretty cool. But season ended, still had South Dakota, Eastern Illinois. UNI told my high school coach if I took a visit there, they were going to offer me. So I went to UNI, and I'll never forget, I was sitting in Harley's office with my parents. And he told me that that I was a scholarship guy for them, but they weren't going to offer me yet because Tanner Miller the year before was committed to UNI and he flipped like 2 days before signing day because Iowa came in late with an offer. I guess some guy dropped out, went to a different school, which opened up a scholarship for Tanner, and he got snubbed from UNI. So they were basically down a scholarship. And so he said that, you know, they would reach out to me a couple weeks before signing day to offer, which I thought was kind of crap, especially since I had Eastern Illinois and South Dakota offering full rides who, you know, competes against them. So went to Iowa on a visit. They told me that I was kind of on the fence, but then about a week later, Coach Morgan did an in-home visit and said that all the scholarships were accounted for, but they wanted me to be a preferred walk-on, which basically means you get a spot at camp that freshman year, which is it's a big thing, right? Because if you don't go to camp, it's kind of tough that first year. But
even if you do go to camp, sometimes it's tough, right, Kev?
It's actually tougher if you do go to camp. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but it's tough to get a name for yourself if you don't. And so it was like 2 weeks before signing day, I get a call from UNI, and they said, you know, we're about a week, 2 weeks out. Well, we're going to call you in a week and offer you a scholarship, and it's going to be comparable to Eastern Illinois. So just kind of a dirtbag move a little bit. While I was hanging on the fences, wasn't sure. At that point, I was pretty much either going to go to Eastern Illinois or walk on at Iowa. All the other schools, Iowa State, Wisconsin, Northwestern, they all stopped talking to me after I broke my foot my senior year. So then a week before signing day, they call me up and they're like, hey, super excited. We're going to offer you a 50% scholarship at UNI. I'm like, you guys told me a week ago that it was going to be comparable to Eastern Illinois. Like, how is half a scholarship comparable to a full? And I was like, you know what, I'm going to walk on at the University of Iowa. I like my chances of earning a scholarship after 2 years. And then it would essentially be the same amount of school being paid for. And the guy was like, hold on. Let me call you right back. And this was one of the assistant coaches. Farley didn't even call me. Calls me 10 minutes
later. He's a little nutless cuck.
Calls me 10 minutes later. He's like, good news, Travis. We got some more money for you. I just talked to Coach Farley. And I was like, you know what? I don't even care to hear it. So I'm going to Iowa. And it got real classless. He started telling me that I would never make it as a Division I football player. I was making the biggest mistake of my life. Like, it got heated.
Wow.
He's like, you don't even want to hear the offer out? I'm like, no. Like, I don't want to go to a program that I can't trust, and I can't trust you guys. So I'm going to Iowa. And then I called Coach Morgan, and he gave the phone to Coach Ferentz, and just said they were excited to have me and excited to see what I could do in camp.
Dude, this is
– I love that story out of you, Travis. That's tremendous stuff.
I do too. I absolutely love it. First of all, that assistant coach is a 100% fucking –
first of all, that assistant coach has been fired like twice already because Harley goes through a staff every couple of years.
Right. Because he's head cuck of the cuck lords. And this whole show has basically turned into a secondary, like it's Washed Up Walk-Ons, but the secondary name of the show is occasionally Fuck You Farley, because there's been so many stories like that of like, I mean, I'm sure there are guys out there that have had good experiences, a couple out there that are like, oh yeah, Farley was great to me the whole time, offered me full, like they've been great. I got a great experience at UNI, but it just seems, and there's probably twice or three times as many, especially for you, Drake, because you know a lot of guys on that side of the state, guys that their stories haven't been told on the podcast, or they went somewhere else where they have the same story with fucking UNI, and it's just like, it is wild that he still is the head coach there.
Yeah, I've heard multiple stories too. I actually had a buddy who was a couple years older than me from Urbandale that ended up, he basically just got his books paid for, ended up being a 4-year starter, 2-year captain. And they kept telling him every year, like, if you crack the two deeps, we'll give you 50. If you start, we'll give you 75. If you're a captain, we'll give you full. Never got off books, was only awarded books for a scholarship. And he was a 4-year starter. So that was kind of another story. Cause I remember talking to him before I even got that call for the 50% offer. And he was like, you know, I love the program. I love my teammates, but he's like, you got to consider this because if they offer you 50, it doesn't matter how well you do. You're never getting more than 50.
That's insanity. I mean, that just makes my fucking blood boil.
A little bit, doesn't it?
It's just wild. And so Travis decides to become a Hawkeye, and best decision ever, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You, your first year would have been 2010,
11. Yeah.
So, you're coming in at a pretty good time in the program, where 2009, you know, old Fat Anger and the boys had just rolled off a couple pretty good seasons.
Okay, pause. Which, why do you want the smoke? Why do you want the smoke from Pat?
Yeah, why do you want the smoke from Pat, bro?
You know what? I'll call him out right now. I don't give a shit. I'm in the best shape of my life right now. I don't care what I looked like in college or the fact that I was a long snapper. I'll take an old, crickety-ass Pat Anger in a rough and rowdy fight any day. Put the fucking minus 10,000 on there. I'll put all the money on myself, and I'll train, and I'll be like, you know what? I don't care. I'm done taking the shit. I'm done. And the Twitter fucking fans love it. Everybody on Twitter, put your money on Pat, baby. I'll train, and me and Pat will fight. I don't give a fuck.
This is the clip you're putting on Twitter. You know that, right?
Pat, I will literally move back to Bettendorf and let my roommates watch my house to be your sparring partner just so I can watch you just beat the bean off of Kluver.
I'm in.
Kluv. This up? Is the clip you're putting on Twitter.
Yeah, I'll put it on Twitter.
Sorry, Travis, but this is the highlight.
We can put one of Travis in this one too. This one's How old is Pat? 35?
Dude, he might not be as good as he once was.
No, he's not quite 30.
Your ass, he's as good as once as he ever was.
That's a good
question. Don't mess with dad strength, man.
No, you're right.
Dad strength's different.
You're right. And he's definitely has the weight advantage on me, which is
concerning. Yeah, you don't got a dad dick yet, Kluver. You know what? That shit, that adds, you're more powerful.
There is some magical power, I think, that he wields over me. But you know what? What do you get in life if you just continue to take shit and you never stand up for yourself?
I mess with it, Kluver. I'm there for it.
And it'll never actually happen. So, I mean, but
you don't know that.
If it does, I'm in.
I'm all in to see it.
This conversation was never going to happen in my mind. So now that this has happened, the fucking wheels are off.
Hey, man, we got bags at the gym I work at. I occasionally, once or twice a week, I like to sit and throw a little I throw a little combo on those things. So it's just whatever. Anyway, sorry, Trav. This is how this works. We're just wasting your fucking time. Talk about your first, you know, so you get that chance, and now you feel comfortable at Iowa. You put the bullshit recruiting, because recruiting, honestly, especially in your sense, for us, at least to a certain extent, at least for me, recruiting wasn't so stressful at all. Like, I had no options. So it was just like, we'll just walk on at Iowa. Easy decision. For you, you kind of toiled back and forth with a couple of teams, and you actually had an opportunity to go be a guy. You know, you could be a dude at a couple places. And, but you finally get past all that bullshit and you get into your first year at Iowa. Talk about the mindset going in and just, you know, how you were going to make yourself. I'm sure at this point, the chip in your shoulder is just massive. And
oh yeah. After that, you and I, coach, said all those things. I mean, as a walk-on, you guys know, you have that mentality of like, you got to have that chip on your shoulder because you got to go in there and earn your spot. And, you know, you're coming in without a scholarship. So you gotta bust it. But especially after that, you and I guys said all that, it kind of added a little bit bigger chip on my shoulder.
I don't even think I had shoulders anymore. I just had chips.
Yeah. See, I had shoulders until we started 9-on-7 and then they went away. But yeah, that's a perfect intro because my freshman year into camp, Christian Kirksey, there was like three injuries that happened at the Leo position, so the strong side linebacker. And all of a sudden, I'm working with the ones my true freshman year in camp. And I think the only position that might have it worse than a fullback in 9-on-7 is a Leo linebacker because of Power O. So Power O.
Power O sucks.
Yeah, Kevin knows.
Hey, guys. Yep, it's me again. Got to interrupt the episode real quick to talk to you guys about Spotify. One of the sponsors of this podcast. On Spotify, you can listen to all your favorite artists and podcasts in one place for free. You don't even need a premium account. Spotify has a huge catalog of podcasts on every topic, including the one you're listening to right now. Yeah, we're on Spotify. I don't know how we did that, but pretty cool. Other things you can do on Spotify is follow your favorite podcast so you never miss an episode. Premium users can download episodes to listen to offline, wherever you are, and you can easily share what you're listening to with your friends on Instagram. If you haven't done so already, be sure to download the Spotify app. Search for Wash Up Walk-Ons on Spotify or browse podcasts in the Your Library tab. Also, make sure to follow us so that you never miss an episode of the Wash Up Walk-Ons.
The Leo linebacker position, your job during Power O is to hit the fullback as hard as you can and try and knock him into the guard so that the middle linebacker cannot be blocked and have a nice tackle. Well, my freshman year, that pulling guard was Brandon Scherff.
Oh, shit!
Yeah, and the fullback at the time was Mark Weissman.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God.
The Hebrew hammer, baby.
And I was a safety in high school, so I'm like 210 pounds at this point. Just right, getting thrown around by two of the strongest human beings to ever go through the Iowa football program.
Just two of the freakiest.
And then not only that, we have blocks right before 9-on-7, and CJ Fedorowicz, 6'7", 270, was the tight end at the time. So I go from Fedorowicz to Scherff and Weissman, and I think that's when I lost probably a shoulder and a half was my first freshman year, and then the other half the shoulder went about 2 years later. But
and how many years off your life?
Yeah, That was not fun, boys.
So here's another funny story. I had something very similar happen. It was like my sophomore year in 9-on-7. Speaking of how bad fullbacks have it. And I went through the 9-on-7, dude. And it was like, maybe then we went to goal line period or something like that. On the first play, I remember me and Miles Taylor just smashed each other. And
I remember
that was it for me, dude. That was my day, actually. After that. And Chris White's cuck ass said something to me about like, why are you always getting hurt or something like that? And Brian comes to my defense and he goes, well, because we send his ass into the fire every single time he's on the field. And he's like, go to the trainer, Drake. And, but yeah, seriously, fullbacks and Leos, I mean, Wills don't have it great, especially if Brian's in a bad mood that day. But yeah, fullbacks, we do have it tough.
Yeah, everyone wants to give the Mike linebacker, you know, all the glory and stuff. They don't do shit.
No, they're scot-free.
Their blocks drill is by far the easiest. I was always trying to sneak into the mic line because the center is always attached to the one technique, and all you got to do is smash him in his shoulder. Yeah. Whereas when you're playing Will, you have to go on and take the left tackle on. Like, that was the one drill that made me not a linebacker anymore, was Ike just burying me over and over again. Like, I had no chance.
So what we're learning is Josie Jewell had a cakewalk through the program.
Pretty much.
100%.
I knew it.
That could have been me.
Could have been you.
Could have been you too, Travis.
Yeah, that's brutal.
Brutal. So, yeah. Hey, someone's got to be the face, you know, James Morrow.
Yeah, someone's got, yeah.
Yeah.
And we decided to take, like, the ugliest dude in our class and make him the face.
God damn it. We can only say that because his salary is 10x what we make, more than that,
and
because
he's married with a child and he doesn't care if he's ugly or not,
right?
And he's come a long way. Like, Josie freshman year was like seriously ugliest dude ever. He's actually a handsome man.
He's clean.
Dude, we speaking of it, we Josie Bo and I worked a summer at the trailer park, and
I remember Snapchat.
Both those guys
well.
Fit right in. I mean, I felt out of place, but they were right at home.
I guarantee if you offered if you gave them like. If they could name the amount of money and they would be reasonable about it, Josie would be like, yeah, I'll take $36,000 to work at a trailer park.
Oh yeah.
And Josie would do it. Like, he'd make that his full-time job. He's like, as long as I could hunt and fish at least 3 or 4 days a week.
Like, he both the same way though.
Yeah. Bo is one of the trailer park boys. Dude. Yeah. That's where he belongs.
Yeah. They both belong on that show. They're literally fucking Ricky and Julian.
That was back when, like, Bo had hair, didn't have a beard, but had like sideburns too. Yep. So he like,
oh, yeah, he had the mutton chops going.
Anyway, Sheriff and Weissman are coming through the hole, and you're just closing your eyes and saying a prayer.
Yeah.
At any point,
that is actually exactly what you do.
That's right. Yeah. So
it's literally what you do.
So at any point, Trav, in that first camp, in that first year, are you sitting there thinking, man, I don't know if I can do this? Like,
yes and no. I mean, I think we all go through that, but the fact that I was working in with the ones that early, even though it was because of all the injuries, that kind of kept my spirits high, even though I could, you know, the room was spinning probably 50% of the time I was out there, but, it kept my spirits high. Coach Ferentz actually pulled me about 3 games into the season, pulled me aside and said that, and I didn't even know this was a rule, but he said that they wanted to pull my red shirt and put me on kickoff. Because at the time we were struggling on kickoff, and he said, you want to pull my red shirt and put me on kickoff. But apparently because I took an official visit like too late into the recruiting process, I was technically ineligible to play, which I didn't even know. Yeah. So he said that basically just keep doing good things, but we're noticing you. So I'm really glad they didn't pull my red shirt, because then I would have not played in the Rose Bowl. But so that kind of kept my spirits going, because yeah, we all go through that, especially when you're on the scout team and you're just getting your head beat in every single day. That's brutal.
Now, I that could be a rule, but I've never heard of that.
I've never heard of that.
Do you think
he even said himself? He's like, I didn't even know this was a thing, but apparently.
Do you think it's actually a rule, or do you think it was KF's way of saying like, hey, I'm trying to recognize and tell you like you're gonna be in as soon as we can get you in, but we want to save you. You think?
I thought that a little bit, but that whole week. I was going with the ones on kickoff. And so, like, I don't know. It was just a weird thing. And I thought I was going to play that week until, like, Friday when because he had a second conversation with me that said I wasn't eligible to play. So that didn't seem right to me either. I'd never heard of that. But weird. I thought I was going to get my red shirt pulled. I'm really glad I didn't, because I would have just run down on kickoff a few times and lost a year of eligibility.
And then your last year would have been a trash year.
Yeah. Yeah. That's brutal. Yeah.
That would have been tough. So you go through that first year and you're kind of, you know, you're at least in a good spot mentally, because you feel good about being with the ones and getting some reps. I mean, maybe a little trial by fire action, but nonetheless, that's kind of how you learn. And that off season comes around, and let's see, what were your expectations going into that spring ball? Obviously you're a guy who, like you said, it's that walk-on mentality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's time to grind. Like, spring ball, it's where it starts. You get the reps in spring ball, that means you're going to get, a lot of, you know, you're going to be up there in summer drills and all that stuff going into camp. You're going to be up there. So what were your mindset then? And at this point, did you know, like, was special teams the key in your head yet, or had it clicked? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you hear all the stories of, you know, Coach Ferentz is always in the meeting room talking about former players and showing clips and saying how this guy and that guy made it on special teams. And so, I mean, you guys know that's where you get here. Yeah, exactly. That's where you get your foot in the door. So I knew I had to start there. I had a really good spring going into my redshirt freshman year. I was working with the twos behind Kirksey.
That guy's pretty good.
Yeah, he's not bad. He's not bad. Fast forward to that year, I was starting on all four special teams. So that was the first time where I started on two, and then towards the end of the year, I was on all four. And then Hitchens got a little banged up towards the end of that year, which is when they moved Kirksey to the inside and started me outside. So I actually ended up starting two games that year at outside linebacker. That was a 4-8 season. So, you know, we didn't have much talent. Yeah, actually, we had talent on that team. We just didn't have the leadership. That was actually probably a more talented team than our 12-0 season.
Talk about your first start and knowing that you're running out there. Like, it gives me goosebumps even just thinking about me running out to, like, snap, my first ball. And you're going out there to, like, tackle dudes. And, like, you're getting a call and lining up against you said your first start was in the Big House?
Yeah, Denard Robinson.
Oh, my God. I mean,
crazy, man. You played shoelace for your first. I used to play with shoelace on video games. You were playing in real life for your first start.
So I'll rewind a little bit. Hitch was a little banged up, but he was playing the game before that.
Yeah.
And they actually benched him at half. He was really struggling with the playbook and missed a bunch of assignments. And then he was also beat up, so they wanted to sit him. I played pretty well the second half, and then that following Monday is when they announced that I'd be starting at Michigan. So I got that whole week was reps with the ones, which was nice. But first play in the Big House, Denard Robinson was lined up as receiver and tailback that game because they had Gardner play quarterback when they had that dual threat option going. And so they were running the jet sweep with Denard, and then once Denard got the ball, he became the quarterback and he had a pitch guy, which we didn't game prep at all for. We game prepped that he was going to be a quarterback. First play of the game, he runs that jet sweep option, and he's coming right at me, and I'm thinking, oh, God, you know, like he runs a 4.240, and I'm like a 6-flat. And I go to make a tackle, and I thought I had him. Clipped his shoe, actually took his shoe off, his foot, and he stumbled forward for about 8 more yards. So, yeah, I thought I was going to have a TFL, and then he's got an 8-yard gain. That was my first play at the Big House.
And you're thinking, oh, boy. Oh, it could be a long day.
Yeah, That was a long day. They rushed for, like, 300 yards that game.
So you started a couple games. So now you really got to be feeling good because, like, you're on the field. You're getting reps with the actual defense, and you're still playing all four.
This is literally every walk-on's dream. Like, scholarship players, they come in just expecting to do this.
Mm-hmm. Which a lot don't.
That's a walk-on's dream.
Yeah. No, it was a great feeling. I felt really good after that year, even though our record was pretty bad. And you guys talk about I've listened to a couple of your podcasts where you talk about the off-season before 2015. Yeah. Or not the offseason, but the bull prep and how awful that was. It was nowhere near as bad as the offseason of 2012.
We've
heard stories.
Tell us about it.
We got back from – so we didn't have a bowl game, right? So we don't have that 3 weeks off. And we get back from the bowl, and we were going 6 days a week. So it was Monday through Saturday, a couple two-a-days sprinkled in there. And I think
– after the Nebraska game, right?
Oh, yeah, right after the Nebraska game. Yeah, my bad. Right after the Nebraska game, we get back, and we're going 6 days a week. And I think five of those days were leg days. Like, when you talk about rhabdo and the guys that went to the hospital, you legit, to go to bed at night, you, like, crawled up the stairs. It was the most uncomfortable thing. And this was, you talk about, like, coming in and having that mindset of, man, I don't know if I can make this or not. For me, it was that off season because – the second day of those workouts, we had that Escape from Saigon, I think it was called, where they threw the racquetballs and you had to chase people down with their shirts.
Awesome game.
Great game.
Well, I dove to get, I think it was Lomax's shirt, and his heel clipped me underneath my chin, and I bit through my tongue. I had to get 8 stitches in my tongue. And so I went the first 3 weeks during this phase of working out 6 days a week and doing a million squats without being able to eat and still having to keep body weight because I had 8 stitches in my tongue. Yeah, so I was just pounding shakes left and right. I think I had like 2 pounds of applesauce a day.
Shake diet.
That was actually kind of where the big tune started to resonate a little bit, because I would have a packet of tuna and I would just put it in my mouth and then I would swallow it with water because I couldn't really like chew or anything.
Oh my.
But I had to get some calories. And so I have like,
you're literally eating like a seagull, dude.
Dude, that was the most miserable time. I had to keep my weight, which was hard enough. And oh my God, that was awful.
Travis the Seagull Perry.
everybody who's come on the podcast so far has had stories that you're just like, wow, how did you make it through that?
And that's the one. That is the one. That is so, I mean, I don't know how many listeners have ever done some serious like elite at their 90%+ potential training where you're like, I mean, not, you can't just go and do this training, your nutrition, your sleep, your stretching, your muscles, everything has to be right for you to just make it through that type of day. And then what Travis just talked about, not being able to eat and not having that fuel to burn in the engine while you're trying to do these workouts. It actually, I'm happy you're alive still.
That was bad.
You were constantly swallowing blood. Cause I mean, I went through all the workouts and everything and you're pounding shakes. You can't eat anything. You're getting yelled at. That first week after the Nebraska game, we had max squats right after the season ended based on our normal max outs of like off season training.
Jesus.
Like that's how intense it was. It was just, and I just, oh man, that was brutal. That still gives me nightmares.
Yuck.
I got to imagine that the, you make that walk off the field, you know, into the, well, I suppose at this time you guys are still in the old complex. So
yeah, we're in the bubble.
Yeah. So you're coming out of the bubble through those doors into the old, and you guys walk into the locker room. What's being said at that point? Like what is the,
you guys talk about Coach Doyle and tell his stories, man, that off season was like just on a complete different level. I mean, he was kicking guys out of the bubble like when before we even did warmups. Like he would walk in and see a guy like yawning, or if a guy was like looking down when he walked in, like he was out. And then you're just like, oh my God, 2 guys just got kicked out of this workout. We haven't even gone through warmups. Like this is just awful. And I couldn't even like with my 8 stitches, I could barely talk. Right. And so like he would ask me a question on purpose. So I would be like, I would have to answer and I would just sound like a complete idiot.
You're like, close, I can't.
I sounded exactly like that. And he ate that up. So he was just constantly asking me questions just to be a dick.
There is nobody like Coach Doyle. There just isn't a guy on earth like Coach Chris Doyle of the Iowa.
He's the best. But man, yeah, there's times where you're just like, oh.
He was throwing dudes out before he had even started drinking his coffee because it was too hot.
Yeah. Dude, that's wild. So, needless to say, the mindset of the guys who, you know, generally at Iowa for sure, kind of the mantra of the team is like, you're going to find guys who work through that and like use that. Like, you know, there's always going to be a few guys who are like, no, fuck this. I'm out. I'm done. But we don't care about those guys. Like, get out then. Like, right. get out. We're going to find who's going to rock with us, and we're going to rock. And you guys obviously decided, all right, we're going to turn this around a little bit. Kirksey, Morris, Hitchens, obviously a huge part of that as the senior linebacking core going into that 2013 season. And you guys –
not to mention there's 3 very key walk-ons that walked on that year, and I think that had a lot to do with changing the culture in Iowa football.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
No.
Yeah, it was Bo, and it was Kevin.
And it was Boone.
Boone.
Yeah. It wasn't me.
Let me talk about right after the bowl game, you guys come back for training, and then you take a young kid out for you're hosting him for a recruiting trip. Was that a special night for you?
That was big time. We went to the wrestling meet, right?
We did.
Was it Iowa Penn State?
Travis was my host for the first night of my official visit.
And I'm surprised you still came to Iowa, Kev.
That was the night that Kevin Ward became a wrestling fan.
That was the night I became a wrestling fan.
Was it? That
meet
was
What do you
awesome.
Mean, surprised, dude?
It was one versus two, dude.
Carver was absolutely lit.
That was lit.
And, the Hawks came away with a W that night.
I mean,
you guys did scare me a little bit when you guys started talking about tempo front squats. But I had a good time, man.
Kev, was that
how 5 seconds is actually 10 seconds.
Yeah. Oh, well, it depends on what coach you get. You got to be strategic about who you hand your card to, because if you get Lima's ass, you got to go for like 20 seconds.
Strategic,
dude. Lima will forget that he has your card in his hand, and you're.
Oh yeah, you'll be down there for days.
6 minutes later, he realizes after he checks somebody else's squat that he's also doing your squat. All right, up, coach. I can't. I'm not.
I cannot.
Lima. And Joel.
Joel was a man, though. I like Lima, too. I love them both. But Joel just got you going, man. Oh. I think he said the F word every other word. He might have been the only coach that said the F word more than Phil Parker.
Fucking kidding me. Let's fucking go.
That was intense.
What you got in this fucking card? You got 314? You got 315? You fucking smashed this fucking shit.
Kluver, tell the story about me getting knocked out by a squat from your perspective.
Oh, God. So, and Joel had your card on that one?
I don't know. We were in the old complex.
So this would have been so this is Travis's junior year. Yeah, it was 20. It would have been our first year, I think.
This is one of those walk-on mentality stories you'll appreciate, Travis.
So first of all, you have to understand Drake as an 18, 19-year-old kid. Drake was, you know what? Very similar to what Drake is now, only he cared a whole lot more about his physical performance and what people thought. I mean, like you said, walk on mentality, like he's got to try and make a name for himself. And Drake was a big dude. Like Drake was bodied up for a high schooler in 2013. Like
it's what we did in Muscatine, dude. They didn't call us Muscle Teen for nothing, man.
Okay. And
no one called you that.
I swear. If you're from Muscatine, you know about Muscle Teen.
But anyway, Drake.
So no one else called you that.
Yeah, well, I was still bigger than you when we came in, but you outbenched me on the first day. So you got bragging rights off the bat, but I finished stronger.
I don't even remember that. But
cool. Anyway, so Drake and his Titan lockdown hips step under the squat rack for it would have been like a set of five. You're going for five. You've got like 90% on the bar, and theoretically 90% at any point in time is usually, if you're a real hardo, you're probably hitting it for two or three reps, but we've gone through, three reps. Yeah, you've gone through a program where ideally you've gained strength and you're going off of your max before you started that program. So if you've gained the right amount of strength, they're looking for you to hit five reps, right? So Drake's going for five. He steps under the bar, probably did some smelling salts or something beforehand. And
don't give away my secrets.
He's shaking the rack. And, we're lifting as a freshman class. And Drake's a strong guy. He's got, 400-something on the bar. And he hits one.
I don't remember the rep. I don't know how many I hit.
You hit one. And then you go down for number two, and I don't know if he was just so jacked up or what, but Drake's body, if you've ever seen a human body go limp under, I mean, I don't even know how to
describe it. Like I was pushing it, right? Like I was trying to get the rep.
Went down, started to come up, and all of a sudden, it was like someone just hit the switch. And Drake falls, Drake It looked from behind like he just quit the rep, and he goes,
Dozy was my back spotter.
Yeah. Oh, and it didn't matter. The weight crashes into the rack, and Drake kind of goes down to his knees, and everyone like looks around like, I think Joel was there, and he goes, oh, what the fuck's going on?
I remember is that I got pulled out of the rack by Josie. I was on my back. So.
He kind of dragged you out like a fireman's carry, and you kind of like are laying on your back, and no one had ever seen you in this state before, because you had like up to that point had been like the hardo, like doing all the weight, and all I remember, long story short, like you recover a little bit, like take a deep breath. The weight, you know, you're obviously not hitting any more squat that day. We go back to the dorm room that night, and like, I don't know, we're still not great friends at the time. Like, we're roommates, and you kind of just like we're laying there trying to fall asleep, and you go, Kloof, I got put to sleep by a squat bar. And I was like, yeah, Drake, yeah, you did.
And, it was a tough day. It was tough, man.
That's tough.
It was just a humbling moment. Anyway, so
Back to Travis.
Dude, we really fucked you on this podcast.
So that was a story that Travis would appreciate.
Yeah, that's a great one. Did Doyle see it?
Yeah, Doyle was there.
Oh. Yeah, Doyle saw it. He was. Doyle sees everything, you know.
That's a good point.
Especially in that old weight room. It was so small compared to clearly, Drake wasn't paying attention to the little card on the wall that said, set your core. Anyway.
Kevin's taking a piss, and we could still hear it through his headphones.
He's either taking a piss or filling his water up, one of the two. So, Travis, you guys go through that shitty offseason, and it turns around. 2013 comes around. And 2013 was a year where a lot of people would say – you know, with some of the wins you guys had that year, I almost don't even feel part of that team. I see it. You know, you guys go 8-4, end up going 8-5 after playing OBJ and Juice Landry and the LSU Tigers in the Outback Bowl, which looking back,
gave them a run for their money.
Yeah, which was a great.
Yeah, that was a good game.
Still a good game. But like a lot of people would say that you guys honestly exceeded expectations that year. Mm-hmm. You doubled your wins and, just talk about that season and kind of like the relief of knowing what the off season paid off. Like you guys.
Yeah. Well, it kind of went back to like, when I look at 2015 and the senior leaders we had on that team, and then the guys underneath the seniors that just kind of knew their role and did the right things every day. It was kind of like that. You know, you had Hitch, Kirksey, Morris, Weissman was on that. I mean, you had a great group of guys.
Sloat was a great leader.
Van Sloten was, yeah, he was actually my Hawkeye, my first Hawkeye Challenge captain. And he was, you guys know Sloat, he was one of the best. Yeah. And so you just had a really solid group of guys that all bought in. And looking back, like, we had just as much talent in the 4-8 season as we did in the 8-4. Like, we had the same guys, and we lost some other key seniors that were really good football players.
Micah, right?
Yeah, that was Micah. Yeah, Micah was the year before, 2012. You had some guys that are still playing in the NFL on that team. But it really started with the linebackers, I think, with Hitch, Kirksey, and Morris. And that's when I believe that's when Jim Reed first came, was that 2014 season. And I think, you know, you'd have to ask Hitch this, but I think one of the biggest reasons that Hitch is where he's at today is because of Coach Reed. I mean, dedicating the time to really go through the playbook and watch film. And I mean, Hitch kind of became a bookworm that off season. And then he was one of the best linebackers in the entire country that year and got drafted. And, you know, now he's Super Bowl champ. So it really started with the linebackers. And then everybody kind of, you know, found their role and bought into the system. And when you have a group of guys that are all bought in and are all heading in the same direction, that's when you have the successful teams. So there's a lot of similarities.
A couple Iowa linebackers that you played with got Super Bowl rings this year.
Yeah, yeah. How about Head, man? How about Head?
I know.
How about him? Awesome. Yeah, might be talking to Head soon.
Having a great off season.
Unbelievable.
Might be talking to Head real soon. And then let's just bring it up to senior year, because I want to talk about, you know, post career too and all that quickly before, you know, I don't want to take too much of your time. Talk about senior year. I know you dealt with an injury. I can't remember exactly. Did you deal with an injury the last play of that junior season?
Yeah, so that junior year was tough for me. I kind of went back and forth between starting and not starting. I got moved to middle linebacker at that point. And I broke into the starting lineup about midway through the year, started two games. And then that third game is where, yeah, I was running down on kickoff, got double teamed, kind of similar ankle to Drake. I got snapped my ankle, got 12 metal plates and screws put in it. Actually then had to have a second surgery because it was pinching a nerve up my leg. So heading into my senior season, I had my ankle issue where I, you know, was swollen every day and all that fun stuff. And then I also had my shoulder was separated so bad that it was actually hitting my collarbone. And they knew I was going to have to get surgery. But, you know, at that point, I'm like, you know what? I want to play my senior year. I'm not going to miss this. So I ended up getting surgery like 5 days after the Rose Bowl. And they had to take out part of my collarbone because it had shaved off so much of the collarbone from hitting my joint. Anyway, so I was pretty banged up going into my senior year, which was tough, but that all started from my junior season.
Now, would you say that, you know, if you slow down the film on the Christian McCaffrey punt return, some would say that you had him, you know?
The interesting thing about that is, so we
stayed. Why? Come on, man.
Clue. Yeah, that's a low clue. But we
hey, you right hey, to hey. I was on that podcast. I was on the field.
You invite the guy on the podcast and you kiss him.
The disrespect.
I'm trying to figure out why. I'm trying to figure out why Travis doesn't put another tackle in the history books, and I just run down, kind of tap off on McCaffrey, talk some shit, and walk off the field. Instead, I'm running the other way, thinking, "Wow, that white guy's really fast. I can't catch him."
So the crazy thing about that is I was the first one down on that punt, which never – I think this was the first time in my career I was the first one down the field on punt.
So you thought something was wrong.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, what's going on? And he hadn't caught the ball yet. So I'm like, this is going to be like –
You know what was going on, Travis?
What's that?
You know what was going on? You know how you were right next to me on punt?
Kev was getting –
Did I knock your ass over?
No. I had two guys on me. You had zero guys.
So I didn't even get touched. That's fantastic. I wish I would have had two guys on me after the clip. But so I'm the first one down, and I'm thinking in my head, like, this is – he's going to catch it right as I lower my shoulder. Like, this is a kill shot. Well, fast forward a couple seconds. He catches it right as I'm about to dive, but I hadn't yet, like, left my feet. And before I know it, he's like 20 yards past me. And you guys know that turf was slicker than shit.
Second worst field we ever played on.
Yeah. And so fast forward about 2 days, we stay in California for a week and we're at a local pizza joint and we have Sports Center Top 10 on.
Oh,
I'm sitting there with my family and they get to number one and it's the McCaffrey punt return. And I'm just flying by him as he's walking into the end zone. That was tough.
Boys. Hey, if it makes you feel any better. There was a couple other white guys. Kevin is probably on the ground somewhere in that clip.
And
Kevin ended that play about 5 yards down from the line of scrimmage.
If it makes you feel any better even more, Jabril Peppers did the exact same thing to me. So we all got on a punt.
97 wasn't even in the frame on the video clip. If you watch the ESPN highlight, I'm like, guys, look, I'm going to be here. I get ran past, but I'm going to be there.
That was tough.
Where am I?
Oh, that was tough.
I hit behind Coach Wallace.
They singled out Josie on number one and, like, highlighted him and was like, this is the Big Ten's leading tackler. And then, I juked him.
Josie
got called out pretty bad on that one by SportsCenter.
That was tough.
He was so mad for so long. That honestly is probably that's one of the defining factors in Josie's life so far.
For sure. That and the fact that he walked through the Iowa program with ease. So we get through. I mean, obviously, you know, the Rose Bowl, there could be better endings, but that season, as a whole, your time at Iowa, talk about what that means to you, what it did for you moving forward, and kind of where you are now.
Yeah. I mean, the lessons you guys know as well as I do, the lessons you learn at Iowa from the football program are just, they give you a step up in the professional world. Because, you know, when you're getting up at 5 a.m., 4:45 a.m. every single morning and grinding and then having two-a-days and you know, getting your head knocked in and you got to come back that next day ready to go. It's just the qualities that Coach Ferentz instills in all of us. It's just second to none. And you get out in the real world and, you know, I'm not calling anybody out in particular, but there's so many people who haven't had that experience of, man, I got to pick myself up and I got to go even though I don't feel like it. And I got to be a here and here and here on time. You get in the real world and that pays dividends because most people go through college and, you know, they get to go out on a Thursday night and then they roll into class 5 minutes late and there's no consequences.
There's none.
And there's no better lesson in life than going through a Division I program for 4 or 5 years and constantly having to be on top of your game. I mean, you guys know when you come in as a freshman, you grow up fast. And if you don't, like, you're not going to make it. So what you learn in Iowa football leads to the professional life. And you know, it gives you a step up on everybody else.
Yeah, it's super nice.
I'll tell you what, now having gone through college as a college athlete, if I were to have a child and they went to college and weren't an athlete and they tried to tell me that college was hard, punch them right in the face.
Solid. Trav, did you train for pro day and do all that?
I did not, because I had to get I had two surgeries after my senior season that I was waiting on all year for. So
you had to, you were literally like, you know, join the club of the people who by the end of their time were basically held together with bandages and wraps.
Oh, yeah. And screws, plates,
and screws. Drake's in the club.
Yeah,
Kevin.
There's a lot of club members, man.
Kevin's frontal lobe is in the club. So then, how quickly? I mean, you're looking for a job, right? And you. I know you started with Hawkeye Community Credit Union, which then changed their name to Green State, and now you're like the fucking big cheese. You're literally the big tune. I'm pretty sure you're CEO of the company.
You'll appreciate this though. When they changed it from UICCU to Green State, I canceled my. That name, I don't like
it. I figured you wouldn't like that name out of all people,
right? I was UICCU for life, and then turned to Green State. I don't mess with – no, okay.
Hey, if it makes you feel any better, legally we had to. They passed a law that we couldn't be affiliated with the university. So legally by the state we had to. I've been kind of going back to, like, the class act that the football program is. I actually stayed an extra semester because I was getting my master's at the time. Since I was on scholarship at that point. And Coach Ferentz said, hey, if you help us out, you know, a few hours a week in recruiting, we'll pay for the rest of your grad school, which was just an unbelievable gesture. Sweet. So I did that. And so I worked in recruiting with, you know, at the time it was Coach Bell and Barnes and all those guys. So that was a fun experience. But, yeah, then eventually became a lender at Green State. Was fortunate enough to move up to branch manager and then ran a couple branches here in Johnson County. And then starting this a week from tomorrow, actually, I'll be VP of commercial operations. So
VP,
moving over to the commercial side of things.
Travis is doing them dirty over there. I feel like
you can hook a boy up with a sweet mortgage or what?
I'm on the commercial. If you want some commercial properties, I can. I'm
sure you know people who know things.
Well, Drake and I have thought about getting into mortgage, real estate.
Yeah. I'm getting my real estate license right now in Arizona, Travis.
Are you really? Nice.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Drake and I are going to become real estate lords, legends. So, so Travis, obviously, perfect example of a guy who, like you just said, takes the stuff that KF and the program gives you and just uses it as a bounding plate to just boost into life and start killing it in the real world. Like we said, Trav, you are the OG Savage Back. You're probably the OG washed up walk on. If we're gonna really, I don't know if there's, like, when we came into the program, I can't really think of anybody else that, like, one of us three could have really
Mark,
like
Weissman.
Yeah, and Weissman too. But like, I don't know. Weissman's
the
gonna
Hebrew
die.
Hammer is never washed up.
That's what I'm saying. He's gonna die and still be able to deadlift 650. So
he's still chiseled.
Insane. Trav, we thank you for your time. Is there anything else you want to say to the fans? This has been a long time coming, and I think everyone who listens to this is gonna enjoy the shit out of it.
No, I appreciate you guys. This podcast is awesome. Listen to just about every episode. So it's kind of fun getting all the players' perspectives, I'm sure from the fans. So appreciate you guys.
A little Hawks by a million before you leave.
Hawks by a million, boys.
Let's go. For Kevin, who actually finally joined us for once, a little late, but
Kevin's really gonna enjoy the intro, by the way.
Yeah, Drake absolutely trashed you.
what else is new?
So for the walk-ons who just every single week are splitting at the seams more and more, in between the three of us, that's it. Travis Perry, everybody, the original walk-ons out.
I'm MJ Acosta-Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.